It's hard to be raining out of.
Come over here, kid, will you, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. It's then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
Mashed potatoes, yeah.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. It is Michelle Anna Jordan live in the flesh. If you pinch me, I'll scream. It's really me. Ended up being gone for about 5 weeks. Didn't anticipate it, but there you go. You know, you got to pay your dues to the viruses, and sometimes you just have to pay a little bit of extra dues to your pillow and curl up on a Sunday night. Anyway, I'm back. We've got lots of great shows coming up this winter and spring. Next Sunday, we're going to hear from the, I believe it's 2002 interview with the wonderful Judy Rogers of Zuni Cafe, who passed away late this last year. Really shocking loss, sad loss. So I interviewed Judy just after her marvelous book came out. So we'll be hearing that next Sunday. And then the following Sunday, coming back is two guests, John Burton of the Santa Rosa Bartender School. And then Stephanie, and why am I blanking on Stephanie's name? I'll think of it in a minute. She has been here for her book on donuts. She's been here, for her book on honey a number of years ago. And she's written a book on cocktails. So I thought that John and Stephanie would make a great, you know, they'd be a great match. And then lots of surprises in February as well. Tonight, we're going to go to Bodega Bay. Coming up on, I believe it's January 25th, is Chowder Day, which was a success from its beginning, and you need to know about it early if you want to participate, because I think all the tickets are gone pretty fast. So we have Fiona Love from Candies and Kites, and also representing the Bodega Bay Chamber of Commerce, and we also have returning for at least the second time, probably the third time, Tony Anello of Spud Point Crab Company. Welcome to Mouthful.
Thank you.
We also have David Love and Carol Anello, and we'll see if we can get them, entice them into the conversation or not. So let's first talk about Chowder Day. Is it the 7th annual, the 4th
annual? 11th annual.
11th, wow.
11 years it's been going. So
time flies. Yeah, that's scary.
It's a great, fun event. Mm-hmm. It's on the 25th of January, and it starts at 10 a.m. We sell no tickets before then, so it's first come, first serve.
So you can't reserve tickets?
No.
Oh, I thought you could.
No.
Oh.
So we're anticipating 900 to 1,000 people this year. And it's just a great way to visit the different restaurants in town and visit the different businesses in town. If you, you know, if you've never been to Bodega Bay, it's always fun. So it's a great event.
And the way that it works is a lot of places make clam chowder.
A lot and of then, places do.
And you just go around and you taste it.
Yep. This year we have 14 competitors. And we traditionally do not give the names of the restaurants out ahead of time.
Oh, okay.
So, and the way it works is it's $10 a person. And with that you get a map that shows you the way. a ballot sheet so you can vote. And we, because we're very environmental, we give you a compostable spoon so you can keep reusing it and then it can be thrown away. And we also give an envelope of coupons that the different businesses in town will supply a coupon with, so you can visit some more businesses.
Yeah, so you do more than just sample the chowder.
Yeah,
you just hang out in Bodega Bay, visit places.
Yep. So it takes probably about 2 hours to visit everybody. Mm-hmm. If you're, you know, you don't have to visit everyone, you can visit a few, but it's kind of fun to go and visit all of them. Mm-hmm. So,
do you have you must have a sense of where people are coming from.
We do. A lot of the draw to Bodega Bay, believe it or not, is Sacramento area.
For this event specifically?
For most events.
Really? But, that's interesting.
Yeah, San Francisco is another big draw because it's just a reasonable drive. It's a couple hours from Sacramento and about an hour and a half from San Francisco. But it's funny how it's Sacramento.
Yeah, that's. And when you mentioned that, I've met a number of people from Sacramento out at events in Bodega Bay.
Yeah.
And I hadn't really thought that, oh, it's a big draw. Interesting.
It is. Yeah.
And then what about local? What sort of percentage do you think is locals? And by locals, I mean not just Bodega Bay, but Sonoma County.
That I don't know. Our chamber president would probably know that, but I'm not sure.
Is it the sort of day, I don't know if this is a fair question, is it the sort of day where Bodega Bay locals say, oh, chowder day, let's get out of town?
No, actually,
okay.
there's a fair amount of people that will. Because, as you know, if you live anywhere that's sort of a tourist attraction, you don't necessarily get to go to all those places. Because you're either working, and they're, you know, open the same time you are, or, you know, you just, oh, I'll get to it, and you never do.
Yeah, I'll get to it
so
is a big
one. So this is kind of a way that people can get out and go, well, I'm going to go and try these this time around. So,
and then what time does it start and end?
It starts at 10 and it ends at 3.
Okay.
So, or until the chowder runs out. So we basically will not sell tickets after 2 o'clock just because it's not fair. I mean, there might not be chowder at all the places left. So 10 a.m. and it's at the Tides Wharf parking lot.
That's where you go to
get tickets.
Fill in the tickets.
Yep.
Okay.
And then you can go to them in any order you want. There's not any set order. It's and there's a number of them that you can actually park in one spot and visit the, you know, three or four different locations. So you don't constantly have to get in your car
and drive
around. So
yeah.
Yeah.
And then how are the award, how's it tallied and presented?
It is tallied Saturday night. A group of us volunteer from the chamber and we sit and count, and then Sissy will announce it Monday, I believe.
Okay, so you don't know, right? You just go out and taste and go home. You don't wait around.
No. Yeah. And then we'll post it on our website, which is visitbodegabayca.com, and you can find out all the information on there anyway, but it'll all be posted there too.
Yeah. And are there prizes? What is someone
win? No, I think it's just the pride of
glory.
The glory. We're the best.
Okay.
So.
And you say you can't, you don't really like to talk about who's going to be.
No, we like to keep it a little bit.
Yeah. So can you talk about who's won in the past? I think I know at least one who's won in the past a number of times.
Well, last year, 2013, Spud Point Crab Company was first. Tides Wharf was, no, Sandpiper was second, and third was the Tides Wharf.
Mm, okay.
The other ones I don't.
Okay, it's a good time to bring Tony in.
I know.
Tony, y'all have won more than once.
Yes, they have. They've won almost every year.
Every year?
Well, we're very fortunate and very, very proud that our staff and my family put this together. And we put a lot into it. And we appreciate the camaraderie from all the other restaurants and the chamber, and things are working out very well for us. And we hope that we are, we can do again. If we can't, we'll see.
Now, do you make just your standard chowder, which is wonderful, or do you do anything special for Chowder Day?
No, we have to be consistent in order to be fair.
Sure.
We don't do anything different. We do it like we normally sell it every day. The recipe is hidden in the safe. Only the cat knows it. And now it's been given to another daughter of ours, so she's helping out now we need it to, because the business has really prospered.
Mm-hmm. On, say, a typical day, not chowder day, but on a typical day, how much clam chowder will you go through?
Well, we make our pots individually. We don't make it in bulk. We make it in I believe they're 2.5, almost, what is it, about a gallon, I think? Mm-hmm. Maybe a gallon, yeah. And we get 15 pints out of it, something like that. Mm-hmm. And each one is made consistently. We go through sometimes on the average, in the weekdays, probably 20. In the weekends, sometimes
20 gallons. Wow.
And sometimes on the weekends, we can go sometimes 30, 35. We've hit 45 was the highest. And we're averaging now on the weekends about 30.
About 30 gallons. And then does that change on chowder day? Do you have to do a lot more?
You know, I really don't know how many. I'd have to refer to the boss over here.
Carol is nodding her head.
She's nodding her head, but she...
You make a lot more. Do you want to pop over and tell us how much you might go through for chowder day?
Well, on chowder day, we usually do about 6 more pots of chowder. And like I said, my husband said, on the weekends, we go through sometimes 30 to 35 pots of chowder. So... on chowder day, it's another six
gallons.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
That is why we appreciate all the businesses participating, because they're not only, they're running their restaurants at the same time as they're doing this. Mm-hmm. So we appreciate everybody who's willing to compete, because we know it's just that much harder for them.
And why do people do it?
It's fun.
Fun is a really good reason. That's probably the best reason for doing anything. But where does the money go? What else? Why is the community
together? All the money that's raised goes to the chamber. We put on a July 4th, but a fireworks show over the July weekend. Uh-huh. It's usually not on the 4th, but it's either the day after or the day before. Mm-hmm. So all the money goes to our fireworks show.
Oh, okay, cool.
So, which is also something that's grown over the years. It's just amazing how many people come out to our little
place.
Yeah,
what a great place to go. And where specifically do the fireworks come from?
The fireworks are set off at West Side Park, so it's over the harbor.
Okay.
And we get people... I mean, it's amazing. We're always amazed at how many people come to our tiny little show. Mm-hmm. It's not tiny. It's actually a pretty decent show, and it's a good 20 minutes long. 25 minutes. Yeah.
Nice.
So, that's where all the money goes to. So, which is, you know, that's why we appreciate all the businesses participating, because it really is a great event.
Yeah, because I know you read a lot that a number of cities have canceled their...
Fireworks are very expensive.
Yeah, really, much more expensive than you would guess.
Yeah.
We're going to take a little musical break, and we'll be back with more talk about not just Chowder Day, but Bodega Bay.
Thank you. descalzo le soldé. El amor, 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 amor. Oh, toute la nuit, on va danser, danser les haricots. El amor, descalzo le soldé. El amor, amor.
Clam chowder. This is making me hungry. We're going to talk about clam chowder itself in just a second. But first, I want to know. So there's coupons that people get coupons to go to different businesses. Is there anything else going on? Do people have live music or anything like that?
There's no live music. We do have a flea market across the street at the Grange on the same day.
Oh, but, really? Oh, that's cool.
But other than that, it's just the chowder.
The chowder.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
And we should say this is all white chowder. No one's doing red chowder, are they?
No, not that I'm aware of this year.
Yeah, so nobody's doing.
We invite people to do.
They can do Manhattan.
They want.
What is that, Manhattan or Boston?
Yeah, someone did it 1 year, but the traditional clam chowder is the one that almost everyone looks forward to tasting. So,
mm-hmm.
And
what? How do I want to put this? And you guys may not know because you may just be busy in your own spots and haven't gotten out and tasted. But I'm curious about the parameters, the variation. If you line up 15 New England style clam chowders, what are going to be some of the variations? I mean, I can guess a couple. Some will have bacon and some won't.
Some will have more potatoes than others. I have no idea. I'm not a cook in any way, shape, or form. But it is amazing to me how there are so many different ways of doing it.
I know one variation, but I want to hear from you. I want to hear from you guys.
They're the clam chowder people.
Yeah.
Well, ours is kind of unique. We combined a lot of different spices, and being consistent, it comes out the same all the time, naturally. Mm-hmm. But I haven't tasted any of the others. All I know is that ours stands out because we have specific spices that we put in.
Okay.
I can't tell you what it is because the trade secret. And if you want to, buy it, $17 million will do.
That is one of the things that one of the ways you can vary. Some clam chowders have no spices, but maybe Italian parsley. Mm. Some have none. Some have a lot of dill, which that's not my favorite. I find dill is pretty aggressive. And then some have oregano, thyme, all different kinds of things. Some have heat, maybe in the form of dried red pepper.
Ours has a little bit of heat to it. It has a unique spice.
Doesn't have a huge amount, though. Mm-hmm. I don't think, because I started taking Lucas out there when he was 18 months old, and he loves it. He was asking me to take him out to your place for chowder before you could say the word.
That's wonderful. That's what I like to hear. Thank you.
You bet. So I forget what I was going to say. Doesn't matter. I always do that. A couple things, though. Stephanie Rosenbaum will be our guest on January 26th. I don't know why I blanked on her name. Actually, I do. I was thinking about her email. She's got this adorable email, and I couldn't get that has nothing to do with her real name, and I couldn't get that out of my head. So Stephanie Rosenbaum will be here with her new book about cocktails, joining John Burton, the Santa Rosa Bartending School. That is 2 weeks from tonight. So while Chowder Day is going on, things at Bodega Bay continue. So you're going to be, in addition to serving, like a million gallons of chowder, you're going to be serving the rest of your offerings.
The rest of our menu, yes. And it helps out quite a bit. There's a lot of activity. People taste the chowder, and then they go in and they buy some, which is kind of neat.
Yeah. So we should say you're giving out tastes. You're not giving out cups.
It's a fair-sized taste, though. Mm-hmm. I think we added it up, was it last year? A girlfriend of mine and her husband did it, and they were stuffed by the time they were done. And they made a point to go to all of them, because they really wanted, mm-hmm. you know, that was their goal, was to taste all of them. Mm-hmm. And they were amazed. Mm-hmm. They were so full by the end of the
Oh, I can imagine. I mean, you couldn't eat a regular portion
from
every business.
No. Mm-hmm.
So people taste it, and they taste outside so that you don't go into the regular line.
Well, we have two different lines. One is the normal purchasing line for the restaurant, mm-hmm. and then we have the clam chowder contest line, mm-hmm. and then it intermixes, and some will stop in and get the crab sandwich, and they'll get some other things like the crab cakes and stuff like that we offer, and it's really amazing how much mm-hmm. popularity that the whole contest brings to Bodega Bay. Mm-hmm.
Each of the servings that most of the restaurants are supplying is a 2-ounce serving. Mm-hmm. So 14 2-ounce servings, that's a lot of clam chowder.
Yeah, that's a 28 ounces. That's a really big portion. You want to take a few hours to absorb all that. So you have really good crab sandwiches. I'm a big fan of the crab sandwiches.
It's very basic.
Yep, as they should be.
Yes. We use the freshest Dungeness crab is available, which mm-hmm. usually comes from another distributor because we don't have the opportunity to pick the crab meat ourselves. But some of our production from our company goes there, and they'll go ahead and process it for us to mm-hmm. the crab meat. And it's picked fresh daily every day. We don't have any carryover whatsoever. We usually use the excess and then put it into the crab cakes, but it's still mm-hmm. fresh as can be. But the sandwiches is the key, mm-hmm. Is the best
and
product we
have. A whole bunch of crab.
Well, it's a quarter pound of crab mm-hmm. with a little special sauce, just give it just a little bit of a taste. But it's 100% Dungeness crab. Mm-hmm. It's not any filler.
Yeah.
And it's expensive, but it's expensive now to catch them.
Sure. What's the cost of the sandwich now?
$10.95.
Yeah.
You know, that's... Yeah. It's a quarter pound of crab meat, you know, it equates out to quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, your crab sandwich and the crab sandwich. Do you know Western Boat down in San Rafael?
I heard of
it. Those are the two best crab sandwiches, at least in the Bay Area. And Western Boat, it's a fishing supply place. And it's got a deli, mm-hmm. but you can get a crab sandwich. And what a lot of people don't seem to know, you get a crab sandwich, and then you walk down this plank, and they've got this little tiny dock mm-hmm. with a couple of chairs and a couple of tables. And it's often wet, especially during crab season. But you go out there with some paper towels, and, you know, the little tiny dock is moving up and down, and you're looking just at dozens of boats right there in the canal of San Rafael. And it's a part of San Rafael that I think most people don't know about. So if I'm ever on 101 and I'm really, really, really hungry, that's, you know, I'll slip in there. And there's never a line. It's just one of those, you know, it seems to be one of those really well-kept secrets. Yours is not a well-kept secret. People love it. So you have the crab sandwiches. You also, last time I was out there, you had hot dogs. You have hot dogs?
Yeah,
because the fishermen need them, right?
For the land lovers, we have hot dogs and tri-tip sandwiches. And mm-hmm. Carol puts on a special meatball sandwich every once in a while. But this year, we're going to incorporate local caught albacore into sandwiches.
Oh, yum.
With our own special recipe on that also. Mm-hmm. And speaking of looking at the boats, you could sit at our tables and look across the street, and you'll see our fleet.
Yes.
Which is kind of nice. It amazes me that my dream come true. When I was a little kid, I used to run around Fisherman's Wharf because my dad sold produce in the area. And my family comes from a fishing family. And I said, someday, you know, someday I'm going to buy a piece of property and I'm going to have my own stand, my own crab stand, my own little restaurant. And lo and behold, it came true.
When did you open Spud Point?
2004.
Really?
Yeah.
That late?
Yeah.
God, to me... And I've been going to Bodega Bay since I was, like, really tiny. I just think of it as one of the landmarks of Bodega Bay. I didn't realize it had been that recent.
Well, we didn't expect it to go this way. We expected to have, you know, just a side little thing because I was going to retire from the fire department. And we were going to have, it was going to be my retirement little deal, but it mm-hmm. took off. And, you know, my son's a commercial fisherman. Mm-hmm. My brother's a commercial fisherman. My cousin's commercial fishermen. Mm-hmm. I mean, we, you know, everybody incorporated into the production end of it, and it turned out real well.
Now, do you also have a boat? Do you fish?
Yes, I do.
Because you still fish, okay.
Yeah, I have the Annabelle.
That's, yes, yeah, my favorite boat.
Yeah,
because I had a cat named Annabelle.
Oh, cool, neat.
And, of course, it's the name of one of the finest poems ever written in the English language, Annabelle
right,
Lee.
Right.
So, yeah, before I ever met you, I used to go out and I would see the Annabelle.
Yeah.
It just made my heart go pitter-patter.
Well, she's on dry dock right now being worked on. But, yeah, we have the Annabelle. We own the Cape Omni. My son owns the Cape Omni. And now my wife and I and my son own the Legacy, which is a new boat that we had built this summer.
Oh, wow.
And it enhances our crab production. And then I have my brother who has the Donna Mia. And then I have a number of boats that sell to me that are friends that I've known for years.
Now, one time I came out and talked to you. Gosh, it's been a number of years. You showed me around. It was really great. And at that point, you showed me a device that you and some other people, I think, had worked on. And you were catching little tiny eels that were going to Korea. Tell us about that.
Oh, that was a...
What did I just step in?
Well, can't tell you how many of those little eel pots we found on Doran Beach.
Yeah. That turned out not to work out so well to us. But we put a lot of effort into it. It was during the salmon crisis, we had to do something else to maintain. Mm-hmm. And we were approached by a Korean gentleman, which I'll just say he's a gentleman, to go into this business. So we all got interested in it and invested, each one of us, about $5,000 just to gear up for it, go to the Fish and Game Commission, get the permit to do it, and so on and so forth. Well, needless to say, we were catching the product, but the product wasn't very good for the Korean market because they're hagfish. They're called haggish, and we call them slime eel. But they weren't to the quality that was wanted in Korea. So as time went on, the price kept going lower and lower and lower until finally it wasn't worth going.
Uh-huh.
And so we just dissolved that and went back into salmon, thank God.
And salmon came back.
It came back somewhat, and we're just concerned.
So it was an experiment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a fishery that looked promising, but it didn't work out.
And what was it? It was a little eel, right?
Well, it was a little eel. It was about the size. They run about 12 inches to 18 inches long.
Oh, okay.
They look like garter snakes of the sea. And they are devastating to anything that dies in the ocean. They take care of it. In other words, they eat whatever is dead in the ocean.
Scavengers.
They're scavengers, yes. And we had a really unique way of fishing them. We had 5-gallon buckets with a little cage trap in it, and then we went to barrels, to 55-gallon drums, and that worked pretty well too. And it was an endless supply of them. And we built this trap to have a sustainable escape. So if the trap was lost, the cotton mesh would break and the slime eels would be released. We went into that with looking for the future.
Mm-hmm.
But it just didn't work out because it wasn't profitable for us down here. Now, up in Washington, the eels are larger, and it is profitable for them. So there is some boats doing that up there.
Oh, so they want bigger ones than
they
what we had down here.
They want larger ones, yes.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. But other than that, there's not much happening in Bodega Bay as fishing. The black cod fishery is open access, but you need a permit to get any more than open access. The main fishery now in Bodega Bay is crab and salmon.
Mm-hmm. What is open access?
Open access means that anybody that has a commercial fishing license can go and get a certain amount. They're allowed, say, for instance, 1,500 pounds every 2 months. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's not enough to sustain a living. So some guys do it as a fill-in.
Uh-huh.
But if you try to specialize in it, you wouldn't be able to make it.
Yeah. Okay. Why don't we take a little musical break? And when we come back, we're going to hear about kites in Bodega Bay.
Oh. Woman of the country, now I find you longing in your soft infertile to. Of my body, oh, you're mine.
Okay, I lied. Before we talk about kites, why are they called slime eels?
They call slime eels because if you touch them, they'll excrete this slimy, gooey goop. And it's just unbelievable. And if you disturb them, like when we did catch them and put them in our live tank, so to speak, if you stirred it around, it would come up to just a big blob of slime.
Really?
Just a gooey mess. And they would actually slime out so much that they suffocate themselves.
Wow.
Yeah. And the Korean people, they think it's a deliski. Well,
that's my next question.
Yeah.
I know. They like the slime.
Well, no, I don't know if they like the slime, but they like the eel.
Oh, the eel. Okay.
Yeah, they prepared it three or four different ways, mm-hmm. is what I was told. And they said the Korean gentleman that we were selling to said he'll fix them for us someday and invite us over. I told him, no, thank you.
Well, I know eel prepared in Japanese eels. Mm-hmm. Unagi is delicious.
Yeah.
It is really good.
I don't know if it's anywhere near that.
Yeah.
It's they seem to draw a big price in Korea, but they definitely want a larger eel. Uh-huh. The smaller ones, they're not interested in.
Yeah. Okay, so now we'll move on to kites. So it's candy and kites. You've all seen it when you're driven by. What can you tell us about it? How long have you been there?
Candy and Kites has been going since 1983. The original store was opened up in Duncan Mills, and then the Bodega Bay store was opened up a few years later. We're the surviving store after we're in our 31st year. My wife and I had the opportunity to buy the store back in 2003, and we're in our 11th year of owning the business, and it's just a wonderful, fun way to make a living. We, of course, have saltwater taffy as part of the candy, chocolates locally made in Berkeley and in Hollister. Our kites come from all over. We do specialize in kites that you come out to the beach, if you're with your kids, the kite has to work. You can't be mm-hmm. futzing with it, trying to rearrange it. So we have kites, they're just easy to fly. They go up. They're going to work in light winds. They'll work in very heavy winds. Just a wonderful time. We also have numerous sport kites or two-line kites. So that while they're up in the air, you're flying them. You're making them do things. They can be doing loop-de-loops.
The tricks and that sort of thing.
All the tricks. And there's also quad line kites. These are kind of the Ferrari of kites. They'll fly forwards. You can fly forwards. You can stop them. You can back them up. You can make them turn on a dime.
These are the ones maybe you see if you're driving through the marina in San Francisco, and there are people there on the grass doing like really amazing things. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. There is also what I refer to as power kites or traction kites. These are kites that are strong enough that they can pull you down the beach. Just standing, and you're able to ski down the beach, being pulled by the kite.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And you could also add mountain skateboards. Step on those, use the kite, up and down the beach you can go. We also have, there are kite buggies, same thing, but this way you're sitting down. It's a three-wheeled trike. It's like a, I'm dating myself here, but it's a big wheel for adults. And then, of course, there's also we have kite boarding that's going on inside the harbor. Anytime we have a good tide and wind, there'll be a bunch of guys out kite boarding.
Kite boarding.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like windsurfing only with a kite?
Yes, it is. A lot easier than windsurfing, I feel, because you don't need as much wind to generate the power to get you up on plane.
Mm-hmm.
We have a local instructor, NorCal Kites, that Joe DeGallo. He's been doing the instruction out there for the last 5 years or so. Mm-hmm. In this instance, the kites are an engine. And you're just figuring out your method of transportation, whether it's on skis, snowboards, ice uh-huh. skates, rollerblades, mountain boards, kite buggies, and you're just out there having a lot of fun with them.
A whole new world just opened up.
And you have a grandson. He would love it.
Yeah, I didn't. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize kites had such broad parameters.
With the parameters, the single line kites, which are great for parents and little kids, 2-year-olds can be out there flying a kite.
Mm-hmm.
You put out 10 feet of line, set the kite up, let them run with it. Even if there's no wind, even if there is wind, you let them run with it. But they're great energy expenders. For the older kids, 10, 11, 12 years old, the two-line kites are fantastic because they're flying the kite. They're making it do something. A good single-line kite goes up and flies.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the younger generation might not find that too exciting.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be have the interact be very interactive with it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they get with the two line kites. They can make them do loops. They can swoop them down along the bottom, close to the beach. They're gonna crash them, and then they're learning the control aspects
mm-hmm.
of it. And the kites, it's amazing how durable they are nowadays. I mean, mm-hmm. the quantity of crashes that these kites will take is phenomenal.
They're not like the 15-cent paper kites I bought when I was a little girl.
No, they're not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Crash plenty of those. What's the best place to fly kites in Bodega Bay?
We like Doran Beach.
Okay, yeah.
The best thing about Doran Beach is our wind predominantly comes out of the northwest. And at Doran Beach, you're facing south. So the wind's going out over the water mm-hmm. and over the waves. So this way, you're facing the water. You don't ever have your back to the water. Especially like on a day like today, we had phenomenal waves out there, and you got the sneaker waves. You never want to have your back on the back on the ocean.
And the beauty of Doran is the waves never get as big as they do farther north.
Yeah.
And it's just
got
nice.
A good like breakwater there. Yep.
The head protects it, so you never really get, I mean, today they were bigger than normal, but for families it's just a great beach.
Yeah.
It's a great sandcastling beach, too.
Yeah, it is. And mm-hmm. Joey liked it, too.
Yeah. Dog. And that's the other thing. Dogs are allowed. Dogs.
Yes.
It's a great family place.
They're not allowed everywhere.
No, not everywhere on the coast.
Yeah, so. But they are allowed at Doran Beach.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do kites cost these days? Say a two-line kite.
Our least expensive two-line kite is about
$27. Okay.
And then we go all the way. Sky's the limit on that. But the majority of our kites are going to be between $25 and $100.
Okay.
For a kite that's going to pull you down the beach, we have a wonderful kite. It's called a 2.5 Snapshot. It has 2.5 square meters of sail area. And it's enough to ski down the beach for an average adult male. 180 pounds, good 10-12 mile an hour wind. It's going to move you on the beach and stuff. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, some people think, well, being drugged down the beach, that's horrible or something. When you're doing it,
sounds like
on
fun
purpose,
to me.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
If you're holding on for dear life, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
But the main thing is going out, having fun. If you're getting pulled around a bit and you feel uncomfortable, you can always sit down. That way, you might do a little butt dragging, but that way you're not worried about being pulled over onto your stomach or onto your face.
Mm-hmm. And you're not worried about liftoff.
Liftoff,
I would assume.
No.
Most of us are pretty efficient anchors, sadly.
But the kite can have enough power to lift you to your feet from a sitting position.
Uh-huh.
But by then, the actual length of time that has that strength is a very short time period as it travels through the wind window. So you'd be out of the power zone by then.
Mm-hmm. What did you do? What did you all do before you bought this place?
Well, hotel work.
Okay.
We were kind of lost souls for about 10 months.
We did a 10-month bike tour in Australia and New Zealand.
Wow.
Actually, we started in Vancouver, British Columbia.
So you just sat figuring out what was next.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The dot-com bust was going on at the time. We got laid off. We'd been planning on this trip anyway, and it turned out to be a great opportunity to take the trip.
Mm-hmm. So you'd been in the Silicon Valley sort of arena?
Alameda, actually.
Alameda. I was working for a software company there.
Okay.
And Fiona was working for another software company at the time. And they decided to reduce their staffing, and I promptly volunteered to pick me. And then a month later, Fiona she knew she was going to be let go, and we had already planned on leaving in September, so we got to start our trip in the beginning of August. So off we went on a tandem bicycle, pulling a trailer, and
we
spent the next 10 months traveling around.
That's adventurous.
Mm-hmm. It's fun.
Yeah. And then, did you already have a connection to Bodega Bay?
The ladies who opened up Candy and Kites, actually, I'm going to let Fiona take over from here.
One of the ladies, her daughter and I have been friends since we were 12. So we just had remained friends. And we would visit Candy and Kites whenever we came through town and say hi. She was sort of like a second mom because I just, you know, I'd known her for so long. And she wanted to retire. So her daughter emailed us and said, do you guys want to buy Candy and Kites? And I thought she was kidding. And as it turned out, she wasn't. So so we thought about it for a couple of days and we thought, well, let's see what it entails. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
Cool. What a great story.
11 years later, we're still here.
What a great story. Yeah. Now you have to explain saltwater taffy.
Oh.
Because I don't think, you know, you don't go out and get some saltwater, strain it, put it on the stove and stir in sugar.
There's really actually no salt water in saltwater
right.
taffy.
And I don't think most people think about that. So it's, do we know where it got its name?
It started in Atlantic City on the coast, in the East Coast.
Oh.
And I don't know if it's an urban legend or I mean, if you look it up on Wikipedia, they have a little tale of this gentleman had a saltwater taffy store or taffy store. Mm-hmm. And there was a storm and the water came up and got all his taffy wet. And either a little boy or a little girl would come up and came up and said, you know, I'd like to buy some taffy. And he was really not in a very good mood. And he said, I don't have taffy. I have saltwater taffy. So hence saltwater taffy was born.
And his wife overheard him. And being the smart one of the group, she decided saltwater taffy was a good thing. And that's kind of where it got its name from. Uh-huh.
So there really is no, it's just because it predominantly back then was sold by the sea. People would go to Atlantic City on vacation with their families. And that was sort of, you couldn't get saltwater taffy anywhere else.
Okay.
It wasn't one of those things that, say, if you were in Kansas, you could find because it wasn't very well known at that point. So that's why that's why you basically see it along coastlines.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
What's the most popular flavor?
Ours is watermelon.
Really?
Yeah, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah. Watermelon taffy. Banana. We actually do have, there is a salted caramel now, which actually has a little bit of salt in
it. Salted, yeah.
Salted caramels are one of the
best inventions ever.
My favorite is the margarita one, and that's got a little bit of salt in it, too.
My favorite, and this makes people, you know, back up and walk away from me. My favorite's licorice.
Oh, it's like the second most popular. Yes.
Yeah. Licorice, and my second favorite is vanilla. I love vanilla. Yeah.
We get our taffy in on every Wednesday and Thursday is usually our taffy delivery day every week. Mm-hmm. And licorice, cinnamon, peanut butter, banana, and watermelon. Of those flavors, I mean, those are core flavors. Mm-hmm. We get them, if we run out of one of them, we get the most grief usually from our customers on the licorice and the cinnamon.
Really?
Because how dare we run out of them?
Well, I think for people who love the licorice ones, we often don't like any of the others.
There's never anyone who sort of likes licorice. It's a love-hate thing.
Yeah, you love it.
You actually hate it or you'll really love it. So.
Yeah, and the people who hate it, you know, some people I know call it the liver of the candy world.
We actually have some people who make their spouses put the licorice in a whole separate bag because they say that contaminates the other flavors, which is very funny.
I happen to be a firm believer in that theory, so.
It's pretty funny. It is. People are very funny with
people's
the whole taffing.
People's passions.
Yeah. And I had no experience with saltwater taffy before we owned the store, and I didn't understand what the big deal was because it wasn't something we had as kids growing up.
Where'd you grow up?
Canada.
Where?
Montreal.
Oh, well, okay. I have a friend who was born in Montreal.
Yeah. So taffy wasn't something we experienced. Mm-hmm. And so when we bought the store, I was totally amazed at people really.
People love it.
People love it. Love it.
As a bit of a side note, while we were on our bike trip, we happened to be down in Nelson Bay, New Zealand, and we came across a kite festival and decided, okay, let's go walk through this kite festival because we were thinking about candy and kites, and it was one of those unfortunate festivals, no wind, so we kind of wandered around, looked at the big kites, and then afterwards, had lunch, and over lunch we had a conversation of where could we do candy and kites. I mean, basically, where could we cop? Where could we go? Live by the ocean, have a business like Candy and Kites, and be successful. And we talked about it for a few minutes, and promptly forgot about it. It was roughly a year later when we got the email saying, "Do you want to buy the business?"
Yeah. Well, so you weren't up at the time that you were asked. You were not here in Sonoma.
No, we weren't in Sonoma. No, we were living in Oakland.
Oh, okay. We had returned from our trip. We'd been back about 8 months.
But, yeah.
Great. What a great coincidence. Mm-hmm. I love that. And then you got involved with the chamber.
Because Sissy Blanchard.
Twisted your arm.
You can't say no to Sissy. She's...
Interesting.
No, I actually have been in with the chamber in its many different forms for the last 11 years. I'm usually the secretary, so so it sort of keeps coming, waning and thing. And then Sissy came to town, and she does a great job, great job.
And you have the farmer's market out there now, which is such a great little farmer's market.
Yeah,
I love that.
That's a community center, actually.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a great little farmer's market. We really like it. So and we like the size of it. It's, you know, everyone says, oh, you could get bigger, but
don't need to.
No.
Don't need to. And it's such a great setting. Yeah. Well, one thing, Candy and Kites, what are your hours?
We're open 10 to 5, 6 days a week. Tuesdays, usually we close in the winter. During the summer, we're open 7 days a week.
Okay. Summer, so 7.
10 to 5. Yeah.
And, you know, how do people find you? I mean, you can give them your address, but I think landmarks are better in Bodega
Bay.
We're
kind of right in the middle of town, across from the Pelican Plaza. You can't miss us.
Yeah.
We're right.
Aren't you making a... if you're going north, you're
corner,
making a right turn,
so
and
we
it's
share
right there.
We share the parking lot with the Boathouse restaurant.
Oh, that's right, the Boathouse.
Yeah, so, and then the new Birds Cafe, which is on the other side
of
us. Birds Cafe.
Now, that one...
That's new.
Tell me about it.
Oh, it's owned by Missy Freeman. And it's been open just a few months, hasn't it?
I think it's going closer to, opened in May, so
May,
closer
so almost a year.
8 months.
Yeah, 8 months. And she does fish tacos, fish and chips. She'll be, there's clam chowder there. Mm-hmm. Almost everyone does clam chowder, I think. Her artichoke fritters are really good. So, yeah, so it's just a nice new little... business. Bodega Bay is so small that any new business is always an asset, just because it brings more people to town. So,
and I'm sorry when Scott's closed, but Scott's closed a really long time ago, probably before
Scott
you were
Adams?
There. Scott's was, as you were heading out of town, you went down that big turn, you came up on the hill, and there's Scott's Fish and Chips.
Yeah. Was there? You would know.
He got sort of famous for a while. He had pictures of people from all over the world wearing Scott's T-shirts, it was. And he had really, really good fish and chips.
Yeah. He got into real estate.
Oh, really?
Scott Adams.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, okay, so what's there now? What's in that
place? A little Mexican restaurant owned by two brothers. Uh-huh. And there was a Mexican restaurant there previously, and that gentleman decided to retire. So he sold the business to two brothers, and they have a little deal there going, and it's working out for them.
Oh, good, good. And then there's, of course, Terrapin Creek, which is on the way to Spud Point.
Yep. Right.
Used to be the beloved Seaweed Cafe, which was so sweet.
Yes.
And Terrapin Creek is doing well, it seems.
Terrapin Creek got a Michelin star this last year. So,
They've really... I was so worried when they went in, just because, you know, it's a hard sell to get people from, you know, other than Bodega Bay in the winter.
We talking to them while they were both doing most of the work themselves. They were painting, and we were out walking the dog, and we walked up and introduced ourselves and said hello, and they were so young, and they had just gotten out of school. And Dave and I walked away and went, I hope they know what they're getting into.
Yeah, but no, they've seemed to have done
they're
really,
a really,
really
sweet
well.
Couple.
Yeah. 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 I keep meaning to get out there.
Have you not eaten there yet?
I haven't.
Oh, my gosh.
I haven't, and I need to get out there.
You should.
And then... 7 days a week at Spud Point Crab Company.
Yeah, 7 days a week. We open up at... we used to be closed on Wednesdays, but we decided that we got enough staff going that we could keep it open 7 days a week.
I knew that you were closed on Wednesdays because I didn't used to know, and I came out on a Wednesday.
You know how many people used to come out on Wednesdays and go, why isn't it open? I said, well, Carol needs a day off.
Yeah, really.
Well, now that the girls got involved, we opened up to 7 days a week. Uh-huh. Our hours are basically from about 9 to 5. We open at 8:30 in the morning because the fishermen usually come in if they're not fishing. We have about sometimes 12, 14 fishermen come out for coffee and donuts mm-hmm. in the morning, which is kind of neat because you sure. get caught up on all the scuttlebutt. And it's pretty neat. Uh-huh. And about 9 o'clock, they all dissipate. Between 9:30, they're gone, and then the clam chowder is on about 9 o'clock, and we get a lot of people coming in about 9:30 because mm-hmm. they want to beat the crowd.
Sure, it's like Swan's in San Francisco. You know, if you want to get into Swan's Oyster Depot without standing in line all the way down, you know, Polk to California Street.
Right.
You got to get in before 10:30. Otherwise, you're going to be in line for 45 minutes.
I'm always amazed at who wants to eat chowder at 9:30 in the morning. Not that it's not good, but it's 9:30 in the morning.
I know. It's just I just kind of look at them. Well, okay.
Hey, I do it. Yeah, 9:30 or 3. You know, if you don't want to stand in line.
Yeah.
The weekends, you got to get there early.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to get there at 1 o'clock for our crab cakes. And they're gone by 2.
Really?
Yeah.
So there's a finite number every day.
Okay. On the weekends, it's the only because the crab cakes take Carol. She does the recipe herself. She does not let the other gals do it. And she takes the recipe, and it's enough for about an hour's worth of sales.
Wow.
And it's gone because it's uh-huh. it's a real intense to make them. And it's 100% Dungeness crab with a little bit of filler, a little bit of seasoning, a little bit of bell pepper. Mm-hmm. And it comes out, unbelievable. They're mm-hmm. so great.
I love crab cakes. I used to make them all the time.
And apparently
I just
need to put my order in.
Yeah. But yeah, they're labor intensive. They're definitely labor intensive.
Tony feels Carol should get up an hour earlier so she can make more.
That's been discussed.
But you guys barely Carol. You start cooking at 4:30 in the morning.
We have to wake her up.
Well, I get up at 4:30, and on the weekends I'm outside. Starting in, but during the week, that's when I have to get my book work done.
You do your book work at 4:30 in the morning?
Right.
You deserve some huge big gold star over your head.
No. You know, when you're dealing in the fish business, you have the fishing game to deal with. You have the Fishermen's Marketing Association. You have to keep all these records. And so when you're dealing with numbers, you just can't be interrupted all the time. So you have to get up early.
Okay.
But on the weekends, it's out there to do the crab cakes and get those things going.
She does the books for our three businesses that we have. Uh-huh. The buying and selling wholesale, the fishermen, you know, what we buy from the boats, and then our trucking company, which we haul down to, you know, the Bay Area, our crabs. And crab, she does
it. Tony needs to learn to do the books.
We wouldn't
that
be
six. I need Carol to help her do my books.
Well, okay. You know, I always knew a fisherman's life was a lot of work and pretty hard, my view.
I just keep adding more and more. She says, why don't you get into something else? You're getting bored.
Oh, gosh. And on that note, we are just about out of time. So to sum up, Bodega Bay Chowder Day, the 25th of January, no advance sales. You get in line. People probably get in line a little bit before 10, but we don't necessarily want to encourage them to.
No, I mean, you get there.
Yeah, $10 and you spend the day. Yeah. Try in 14 different versions of clam chowder, voting for your favorites, and hanging out in Bodega Bay, which is certainly one of my favorite places in Sonoma County.
If they need any information, that, like I said, they can visit bodegabayca.com.
Yeah.
And I'll have all the information
on
there.
You just
the chamber website.
Google Bodega Bay Chowder Day, you go right to it. Yeah. It's really easy to get the information. Tony and Carol Anello, David and Fiona Love, thank you so much for driving out here, especially knowing how early you have to get up. Now go home and go to bed. And meet us back here next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful. It will be a very special show featuring my interview with the late and very missed Judy Rogers here on Mouthful. Have a great week. Kitchen. Oh, yes, she's been there all day.
this story. Well, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough.
Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour, is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan, who also selects Mouthful's music. Live episodes are engineered by Michael Young and occasionally by Mary Moore Campagna. Mark Fuller is Mouthful's recording and post-production engineer. Podcasts are available at iTunes and krcb.org. For more information, to suggest a guest, and to find out how to be a guest yourself, email catsmilk@sonic.net or send a message via Mouthful's Facebook page.
Got some beans and good cornbread.
Listen to what the preacher said.
Praise be.